along with Jay Cadlin. You're listening to Project Prospect and First Inning Radio. Hi, Stephen and Jake.
I'm doing all right, Adam. How are you?
Not bad, not bad.
It's awesome.
So Jake and I are thinking of trying to do a regular podcast. We figure with the amount of energy both of us put into prospects that it makes sense to try to talk about them on a semi-regular basis. We were very excited to see that the last few podcasts we've done, including some of the interviews, have really gotten a lot of downloads and a lot of plays. Jake, have you realized, my Mike Malik interview is up around almost 1,000 listens and downloads, and the last podcast we did is up over 800.
That's awesome.
There's definitely a thirst for prospect knowledge, and Jake, maybe we can kick right into the whole project that Project Prospect and First Inning have really been working on for, we've been going at it for a couple months now.
Absolutely, and it's exciting that we're actually making finally some headway on this project, which hopefully you all will be able to see within the next week or so. But what Adam and I are working on, along with the rest of the Project Prospect and First Inning teams, is what we're basically calling Prospect Book 2.0, our digital prospect guide. And what we've created is a format where, in addition to the traditional, you know, picture and stats and write-up that you get in a prospect book like you buy from Baseball America or John Stickles and guys who do a great job, we've been able to create a digital format, a file that you'll be able to download and keep on your computer that will also play video of prospects so that in one package you'll be able to see, you know, how did the guy do with his numbers, what do the scouts think about him, what's his biographical information, and what does he actually look like when he plays. And this is going to be a really, you know, impressive project. We're really excited to see what the finished product just looks like and how we can share it with you guys.
And it's a lot of fun as a prospect fan getting to see the amount of video that has emerged on YouTube over the last few years on ProspectTube. There's definitely a huge, huge demand for it. I think Project Prospect's YouTube channel is somewhere up around in the 4,000 or 5,000 view range, which is just in people who are specifically seeking out our video channel, subscribing to our videos. And that's what's really exciting for me about this project, that we're not looking to come and try to replicate a model that other people have been doing in the Baseball America Prospect Handbook or Stickles book or comparable products. We're trying to redefine how prospect coverage is done during the offseason. I think a lot of the video that we have is video that people haven't seen before, and while I'm all about sharing as much as possible, we're hoping that with the sales of our digital prospect guide, we can gather the resources to allow ourselves to make collecting videos a priority every year. And I think we already have started to establish ourselves as one of the top sources for prospect video, and I want to keep going down that route. When you have the first inning data as well as the statistical analysis we've done at Project Prospect, and we've made lots of scouting connections recently, I think when you combine all those aspects, we have a pretty interesting product going on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, our whole goal here is to make, you know, to make prospecting as accessible as possible to, you know, to everybody out there. One thing that will be happening that, you know, again, just another example of the way that we're redefining how this is done is we are actually inviting all of you out there to join us in this process. Obviously, video collection is, as we've learned, a very much a community-based thing. And we bring in, as we bring in video, and we've got a lot of it, we also know that there are people out there who have their own amazing collections of video. And one of the things that we would like to do as we're pushing this project is to invite you to submit your video, and we'll be providing more details on that as the technical infrastructure gets set up. But if you've got great video on a prospect, if you saw somebody go, you know, in the rookie league who no one else has seen, if you saw him in high school, if you saw him in college, or even if you saw him on an upper minor league level, but you have really good video, you know, we want to see it. We want to make it a part of what we're doing. And if you're able to give us something that, you know, we're able to actually put into the book and use, you know, then you'll end up getting either a significant discount on the book or some other, you know, or other bonuses depending on how, you know, on what we're able to use. And we're really excited to bring the community into the creation of this book.
It's a resume item, too.
Absolutely.
So we're busily working away on that. The challenge right now has been just trying to figure out the best way to present video, what kind of lengths we want to go to. Are we doing 30-second videos? Are we doing minute-long clips? And really fine-tuning the design. But Jake, I'm pretty happy with the way things are falling together, and we're hoping to have a sample that people can start looking at pretty soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we really believe that this is going to change the way that you all out there can learn about prospects, and we're very, very excited to bring this to you, and we can't wait to show you what we have cooking.
And let me add that with the pre-sale dollars we get for this product, we're going to be not only investing money into having scouting sources help us with the reports, we already have some consultants coming on doing the scouting advice. So if you're anxious to see as much scouting information as possible, I think we're going to come at you with a variety of sources and some of the highest quality scouting info we've ever provided. And additionally, Jake and I have already talked about planning a trip to minor league strength training in Arizona. I have a few weeks blocked off where we would just be spending days at every minor league camp and getting as much video as possible. Jake, today on Twitter, I was talking to some of my followers about getting a larger memory card for my camera so that rather than 2.5 hours of video, I could take closer to 5 and just set something up with a tripod and maybe walk around and take video of guys all day. And I think you're in agreement with me, Jake, that it would be fun to take this to the next level maybe at some point and start doing it for the draft too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one thing I want to add when you guys are hearing 5 hours of video, understand that Adam is actually talking about 5 hours of video per day, that we will be bringing in from minor league spring training tens, hopefully hundreds of hours of video that we can then edit down and make sure that you guys are getting the very best, you know, coverage that's out there.
That's the fun part, too. When you go on YouTube, you can find videos, and a lot of times they're videos that look like they're cell phone quality. They're not taken from very good angles. They're helpful if you haven't seen a guy. And then every once in a while, you run across that well-edited video that you could tell the people had the experience taking. When we were at the Fall League, I think, Jake, we learned a lot about the different angles to shoot, what we were looking for. And now I think the next time we go out and do something like that, we're going to have a plan to take some of the best video on prospects people have ever seen.
Absolutely, absolutely. I did want to take a moment and address the question that I'm sure is popping through everybody's heads, which is, you know, how much is this thing going to set me back? Am I going to have to spend $200 to get this product? Am I going to have to, you know, is this going to take all the money that I've been spending on baseball to put towards this? And so, you know, what we wanted to also let you know is that we are aware of, you know, we don't want to be gouging people. Our goal is not to, you know, make $1 million off of, you know, cheating you guys out of a product. What we're going to be doing is having a couple of different levels of the prospect book available so that at whatever price range you're comfortable with, at whatever, you know, level of information you want, we can provide you with it. So there will be more details coming, but we also feel like we're going to be providing you with the best value in prospect coverage anywhere in the minor league baseball community right now.
And to expand on that a tiny bit, we're looking at doing a top 100 guide as well as a top 300 guide. So if you're someone who's just looking to know about who are going to be the top rookies, elite prospects to know for your fantasy league, the top 100 might be good. If you're someone in a deep dynasty league or you can't get enough baseball, the top 300 might be better for you. So that's kind of the direction we're thinking of heading in.
Absolutely. And like we said, our goal is always to give you guys what you want. And so we're going to be providing different flavors of products, and we hope that you'll enjoy them.
And by all means, if you have any ideas, feel free to shoot us an email. Come on to Project Prospects message boards. We have a forum discussing what we want to do. Jake and I, one of the reasons that I think we've worked so well together is that we share the opinion that we want the approach to whatever we're doing to be communal, that I've read about the Braves and the success of their scouting, and a lot of it, Sean Sheerholz, just attributes to having more people than everyone else. And we feel that the internet community as a whole can be the best scouting department in baseball. And especially with so many people doing websites and getting picked up by teams, there are a lot of people out there who are going to end up working in baseball. And if we can help be a catalyst to help you start your career, or if you can start your career with us, we're thrilled to work as a community. It's no man's an island in this sort of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as we keep seeing over and over and over again in, you know, in all sorts of contexts, whether it's news gathering, whether it's fundraising, whether it's, you know, political action, all over the place we're seeing the power of the internet community. And that's something that the baseball community has known for a long time, ever since Bill James started writing the baseball abstracts 30 years ago, you know, when we had physics professors and college students and, you know, business executives in their spare time building and creating some of the, you know, the programs and the stats and the data that we still analyze today. You know, this has been a very traditional part of the baseball community that we're really hoping to harness and bring to the process of finding minor league talent and evaluating it. We're looking forward to it.
So while we have the digital prospects guide down the line a little bit, one thing I decided to do this year on Project Prospect is that we've always been about doing a different blend, a different flavor of rankings. Baseball America is well established with its league top 20s, its team top 10s, which you can then get 30s of in their prospect handbook. But one thing I really enjoyed doing right at the beginning of this offseason was positional prospect rankings. And I think for someone who's looking at things from a fantasy perspective, it might be helpful to see the top catchers stacked up against each other, top first basemen. So you can go on Project Prospect now. We've completed our rankings by position. We have top 15 for all the position players. Then we did a top 25 pitching prospect list. And now we've started diving into top 25 lists by division. Division is somewhat of an arbitrary way to look at prospects, but I think it's another fun way to slice it up. And if you're looking at how your team could compete now in the future, for me, it was kind of interesting looking at when we started with the NL West, do the Giants, Rockies, Cardinals, Dodgers, which teams put themselves in the best position for the future? And oddly enough, the Giants have started turning things around a little bit. And Jake, you got to be a bit of a part of that firsthand doing some filming at the San Jose Giants Stadium this year.
Absolutely, yeah. It's, you know, it was a lot of fun to watch the San Jose Giants. When the season started, they featured a lineup that had, you know, seven legitimate major league prospects in it. This was actually, this didn't even count Thomas Neal at the time, who wasn't even playing every day at the beginning of the season. And then the top two in that rotation was Madison Bumgarner and Tim Alderson. So there were a lot of prospects down there to see. And what was a lot of fun to watch was to watch some players like Buster Posey, like Thomas Neal when he burst onto the scene, really go from prospect sort of in potential to prospect with actual talent to actually see some performance. And that's really one of the best parts of minor league baseball is getting to actually watch somebody blossom before your eyes.
And Jake and I both being out in California, NL West is a good one for us to look at prospects since we make it out to California League games. And you do have the Giants, the Dodgers, the Rockies, and the Diamondbacks, and the Padres, all with their high A teams here in the California League. So we got to see guys like James Darnell, like Jared Parker. Another one I got to see at minor league spring training, Drew Cumberland. We got to see Hector Gomez at the Arizona Fall League, Brandon Allen at the Fall League. It's a lot of fun, more fun for me this year putting these lists together now that I've seen so many of these guys play. And even the ones who I didn't see in the minors, got to see some of them in the big leagues, like Kevin Mulvey, Scott Elbert, got Tyler Matzek coming up from the draft. So it's kind of fun to start comparing pitchers and hitters. I think that's one of the more difficult things to do in prospect rankings because they're so different. And this was our first list doing that this offseason.
Absolutely. And I want to sort of point out again another reason why we're so excited about doing this digital prospect guide. Like Adam just described, there's nothing like actually seeing a guy play, whether it's live in person or on video. But, you know, to actually see how he swings, see how he, you know, see his windup, does he repeat his mechanics, all of these things that that many of us have had to trust scouting reports on for years and years and years, you know, we're going to be able to actually look at, and that changes, you know, your ability to understand players in a very fundamental way. And like Adam said, it's a huge part of prospecting. So Adam, let's talk about this list for a second. You did rank Posey over Bumgarner, and I'm curious how many people out there would have thought that would have happened at the beginning of the season when Bumgarner was obviously ranked as, you know, a top 10 prospect in all of baseball and all of those things. Why don't you talk a little bit about where Bumgarner and Posey are right now?
Yeah, Bumgarner's an interesting one in that he was, I think, top 10 in just about every prospect list entering the season. He tore apart the South Atlantic League in his first full pro season, and having seen him pitch in high school, I had a lot of confidence in him and his athleticism and his fastball command. But the talk about him has always been he doesn't have a very good breaking ball. And when I got to see him pitch in San Jose, he still didn't have a very good breaking ball. It's kind of one of those ones where when I was seeing him in San Jose, maybe one out of every four was a good breaking ball where you're like, okay, that has potential, but it was still very inconsistent. And I think he's a guy, because of his deceptive arm slot, who could eventually perhaps develop a decent changeup, but he hasn't really done that yet. So in the South Atlantic League, he was pretty much blowing away guys with his fastball. He came up to the California League. The strikeouts took a bit of a hit from the South Atlantic League, got promoted to Connecticut midseason, and the strikeouts took another hit. But what's impressive with him is, I think, because he has that deception and he has such good fastball command, that even though he doesn't get a ton of movement on the pitch and hitters, for the most part, can look for fastball with him, he throws it at both corners of the plate, up and down, to the point where guys aren't used to seeing that from a lefty. So he still has a lot of promise. I spent some time talking to people who saw him regularly in Connecticut, and it sounded like he was messing around with the grip on his breaking ball. And right around the time he got promoted to San Francisco was about the time he was finally coming to feel comfortable with one of the groups. And then you have Buster Posey, who we've made a big deal about. I've spent a lot of time recently studying ground ball rates and how they can impact a hitter's power. And what I've noticed is the guys who tend to be a couple deviations above the mean in terms of the numbers of ground balls they hit have trouble hitting for high power totals. And Posey's a guy who hits a lot of ground balls. And granted, when we saw him in the fall league, he'd slowed down a step. So if you look at his fall league numbers, they're not pretty at all. Lots of talk about him being tired. He even told me when I interviewed him that he was tired. But what's fun with Posey, he's a really patient hitter. He's a good contact hitter. And he's the kind of guy, when he's up there at the plate, and Dustin Ackley does the same thing. I guess in the big leagues, Albert Pujols is the best example of a hitter. When he's up to the plate, you know it's not the pitcher throwing to the batter. It's the batter who's in control. And Posey's a guy who does a really good job getting into hitter's count, waiting for his pitch and not missing it, not being overly aggressive, but at the same time, every once in a while, he might swing at a first pitch. And he does have that power waiting. I don't think he's someone who's going to be a well-above-average defender. People talked about his receiving skills not being that great entering the season. And for people who aren't terribly familiar with what a good receiver is, for the most part, it's a catcher who can basically stab the ball and catch it where it's thrown and hold it still. So you're trying to give your pitcher the best chance of getting a called strike. And if you grab the ball from outside the strike zone and pull it back in, it's going to make your pitcher look bad. It's not going to help you get strikes. Also, if you're dropping the ball frequently. So there's some people saying that was an area that Posey had room to improve entering the season. I think he's gotten to the point where he's a solid defender. He has a pretty good arm. He was a shortstop in college, so he has a lot of footwork, even though he has slowed down a little bit, not quite as agile as I'm sure he was as a teenager. I think all around he looks like a guy who's a very good bet to be an average big leaguer and has potential to be more than that. So it's fun looking at him and Bumgarner, two guys who have established that they have pretty high floors. And then the ceilings could be right up there, too. So it really wasn't too difficult for us to rank those guys 1-2 in this division. And I think most people would do it the same way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How's that for a short answer?
Just very, very brief. I appreciate it. It's interesting because Posey, it now looks like, with the way that the catcher market has gone in the MLB free agent Hot Stove League this year, may actually end up being the opening day catcher for the Giants. And what's really interesting is that he's basically, like Adam talked about, he does hit a lot of ground balls. And so he's probably not going to be the power threat, you know, quote-unquote, that Benji Molina was last year for the Giants. But because of his, you know, patience and on-base percentage, and again, Molina was, I think, at 281 for his on-base percentage last year, something along those lines, that he actually is one of the few rookies replacing a veteran who does not have to do anything supremely off the charts to, you know, to actually be an improvement over the guy he's replacing, which I think is a really good spot for him to be.
Yeah, it could work out pretty well for him. It's always hard to say what kind of timetable these guys are on, but the consensus with Posey is that he's very close to big league ready, reached AAA in his first full season. The Giants skipped him over AA, and he was an advanced college hitter. Him and Gordon Beckham, they put up ridiculous numbers their junior seasons, and one of my hesitations with Posey was, yeah, he was pretty good as a college sophomore, pretty good as a freshman, but his junior season was just off the charts, and then the Giants sent him to Hawaii. He didn't put up the greatest power numbers. We got to see him in the California League. He was a pretty good power hitter, but he doesn't, for example, someone lower on the list, James Darnell, hits the ball in the air frequently. I saw him hit some Monster Jackson High Desert. Of course, everyone hits Monster Jackson High Desert. But Posey's probably not the kind of guy who's going to get you 25 or more home runs a season. He is the kind of guy who's going to hit a lot of line drives, put the ball in play a lot, and take his walks. And like I said before, just someone who's very good chance to become an average big leaguer or better.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about James Darnell a little bit. What do you think his biggest strengths and weaknesses are, and you know, how soon, you know, do you think we can see him up in the major leagues?
Similar to Posey, Darnell's a guy who does a pretty good job managing the strike zone. He takes a good number of walks. He doesn't strike out too much. Someone who gets a lot of quality at bats. And like I said before, Darnell does have a bit more power potential than Posey. Some people have hesitation with college guys who still haven't reached AA. A lot of times AA is the level where you really get a good idea of what kind of hitter a guy is going to become. In Darnell's case, the Padres had Logan Forsythe, who is a better defender than Darnell. They opted to start him in the California League to begin the season. So Darnell was a 22-year-old in low A, which isn't particularly young for that level. Then when he got moved up to high A, he turned 23 in January. So he's a 22-year-old the rest of the year in high A. And he's about the same age as Posey, but I know that we're a lot higher on Darnell than a lot of other publications. Part of that reason is I did get to see him play a few times this year, and while he may not be an above-average defensive third baseman, I think he could be average there. He doesn't look awkward at the position. I know his total zone rating isn't that pretty, albeit it's from a small sample, and Baseball America entering the season didn't give him the greatest review for his hands. But I think he has a pretty solid arm, and one of the unique things about Darnell as a third baseman is he is an above-average runner. I went back and reviewed some of my video, and I read that he was a good runner. Some people have described him as a five-tool talent. Well, I'm not huge on throwing five-tool talent labels on prospects because I don't think it really tells you that much about the kind of guy it is. Darnell is someone who has a lot of speed, and I think that's another thing that could work in his favor, beating out some extra hits. And to me, just another guy, he doesn't have the same kind of certainty as Posey right now. It'll be interesting to see what he can do in the upper minors, but I think he's someone who will gain a lot more fans once he gets to AA. And I think he's a guy who has potential to be an above-average regular and looks like a solid bet to be an average regular or at least a regular. And really, there aren't that many prospects you can say that about.
Definitely, definitely. So, you know, so looking through this list, I know that we definitely base a lot of our grades on, you know, we really value a high floor and a guy who's, you know, who's going to be a big leaguer. If we're looking down this list towards sort of the middle and the bottom, who are some guys on this list who you think, are obviously, they're more like lottery tickets. They've got much, you know, they may end up being absolutely nothing, but if everything breaks right for them, they could be, you know, very, very good players. So, you know, who do you think would you put on a list in that category?
I'll touch on a few guys briefly. Jared Parker, his stuff was just about as good as Strasburg's when I saw him. It was very impressive. Didn't quite have the fastball command, but still had solid command. He has a really polished secondary. Getting to see him and Bumgarner, I know I've talked about this a lot, but I got to see Parker, Bumgarner, and Strasburg all within about 4 weeks of each other, so it gave me a good way to compare the three. And Parker's secondary is far and away better than Bumgarner's. Not quite there with Strasburg, but he did end up having Tommy John surgery. There's even an interview of him on YouTube right now where he's got his arm in the air cast. And he's someone who we wrote on the list. He has number one, two stuff. He could be a top of the rotation starter. But at the same time, I think a lot of people expect Tommy John guys to come back 100% of the time. And from what I've heard, it's closer to 85%. But there's a little bit of uncertainty with him. Had he not had the injury, would have put him higher. But also Lincoln Hamilton, who does a lot of draft coverage for us, said that he didn't like Parker's mechanics at all. And I haven't heard many people echo that in the industry. But looking at Parker, he is a guy who puts a lot of stress on his upper body, on his shoulder, on his elbow. And Lincoln said that after the Futures game. And sure enough, a few weeks later, Parker got hurt. And listening to Parker describe the injury, it wasn't an all-of-a-sudden sort of thing for him. It just kind of built up over time. And the thing I always wonder about with the Tommy John guys is, okay, maybe it's something that they've been working on since high school. They've been damaging that ulnar collateral ligament. And they get it fixed, and they're good for another 5, 6, 7 years. Maybe they refine their mechanics so it doesn't put as much stress on it. But what if Parker is going to continue to have injury problems? It's just a little tough for me to be fully on board with him, even though he is still young at this point. So he's a fun wild card, and I'll just throw a couple other names out there. I think Kellen Kobocky is a guy who was one of the top college hitters in the nation. And granted, he was playing at a conference that didn't have a ton of competition, but he's been derailed by injuries for the bulk of his pro career so far. And while he might not be a spectacular defender, he's someone who could really break through with his bat. Then you have Zach Wheeler, Donovan Tate, two guys who were early picks in the draft last year who are going to be fun to follow. There's still a lot of uncertainty with both. I wouldn't say that they're great bets to even become big leaguers at this point, but obviously if you're a top 10 overall pick in the draft out of high school, you have a lot of talent.
Absolutely, absolutely. So now that we've reviewed the NL West, which has already been posted, let's talk about the next division, which we're working on right now, which is going to be the AL West. What do you think about the AL West prospects right now?
It's interesting looking at this group of guys because with the AL West, you're only taking four teams. You do have Brett Wallace just exiting the division, but now Michael Taylor's coming in as an AL West prospect. The A system definitely stands out to me with Michael Taylor, Chris Carter, Jameel Weeks, Grant Green, Adrian Cardenas. Yeah, they pretty much called up all their pitchers recently. They don't have a Brett Anderson or Trevor Cahill in the minors right now, but they have a lot of bats who I'm into. And then with the Rangers, you have Justin Smoke, Neftali Feliz, Martin Perez, three high upside guys there who could all go on to become above average regulars. The Mariners, I'm a big Michael Saunders fan. I know some people thought that we could have had him higher on our corner outfielder list, but he's a guy who could potentially be a center fielder at some point, if not for the Mariners having such good defensive players. Granted, he's pretty big and might slow down a little, but he's someone who has a good amount of power potential. And then Dustin Ackley, the number two overall pick from the draft. Between those two guys, the Mariners have probably the best pair of corner outfield prospects in the minors. And I also really like Michael Pineda as a wild card pitcher in that system. He was someone I got to see in the California League playoffs and was showing a fastball that can touch the mid-90s, as well as a very good breaking ball. I think he's someone who could have a huge breakout season this year. The Angels system overall doesn't have a ton of depth. There are some interesting guys. I've talked to people who like Michael Trout about as much as anyone in the draft last year. If he can play center field, he's going to be a very high upside guy. He did reach low A in his pro debut, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him make it to high A. Maybe we get to see him in the California League next year, Jake. They do have Trevor Reckling, who pitched in the Futures game. I also saw him pitch in the Baseball World Cup against Cuba where he was injured. I think it was determined to be a lateral injury at that time. Not sure if he's come back healthy. And one of our guys who traveled with us to the Fall League is a huge Alexia Amarista fan. Very good contact hitter. He's a fast runner with some decent power, could be a second baseman who people start hearing a lot more about. So there are some guys, Hank Conger too, in that Angels system. I think overall this division has a lot of talent and it'd be fun to see how these guys develop. And I've actually gone this whole time without even mentioning Tanner Sheppers, whose stuff is right up there with Jared Parker.
Absolutely, absolutely. We got to see Sheppers. He came out in the Futures game, and basically at the time I was doing a live chat with Ethan Saporito, one of your writers, Adam, and we were our jaws just sort of dropped watching Sheppers go. He's got some stuff.
Yeah, one of the question marks with him in college, on top of having the shoulder injury, which I'm not terribly concerned about. I want to look at his mechanics a little bit more, but it seemed to me like he didn't want to disclose enough information about his shoulder his junior year at Fresno State for teams to decide to roll the dice on him. So he went the Indy route. People are saying he wasn't really at 100% for the first few Indy starts he made, but when we saw him at the Fall League, he definitely was throwing his hardest, and he showed pretty good command in Arizona, which is good because he didn't have great command in college. It's still a really small sample on him, but it could be that if he doesn't sharpen his command right away and prove durable, he might be a guy who could be fast-tracked to the bullpen. I wouldn't be shocked if the Rangers decided to try him that way. If he reached the big leagues next season as a starter, he's probably got a few years in the minors, but definitely a guy who has the kind of fastball that gets crowds pretty excited.
Absolutely, and, you know, Sheppers is just one of a number of high upside pitchers. So you mentioned, in, you know, in this division, I'm actually excited that you mentioned Michael Pineda, who's a guy who I actually thought was on his way to a breakout last year before he was injured. And when he came back, you know, showed that he still got some fastball velocity and some movement. And, you know, it's going to be really exciting to watch him. Trevor Reckling had some issues with walks in Double-A, but he was also 19 in Double-A, which is a pretty – you know, impressive feat, for, especially for a left-handed pitcher. So it'll be very exciting to see how some of these guys are going to develop in the future.
Yeah, and this division did also lose a few prospects recently in the series of blockbuster trades, Tyson Gillies and Philippe Amont. The Mariners also lost another pitching prospect. I think it was J.C. Ramirez. I'm not sure if I'm getting the last name right, but another guy I saw in High Desert. But touching a little bit more on Michael Pineda, you were asking me about wild cards in the NL West. I would say Pineda for the AL West could be one of the best wild card prospects out there. He's not someone who's been talked about a lot because he missed most of last season due to injury, and you got to hold that against him. But at the same time, he seemed to come back, and we saw him, Jake, throwing at 100% in the California League playoffs. Anytime you have a guy who exhibits the elite commands that he's shown, he might be up there with Bumgarner in terms of his walk rates in the low minors. And when you know he has the kind of lights-out stuff Pineda possesses, if he can manage to hold his own as a full-season starter and continue to progress, he could easily be a top-of-the-rotation starter. And he's someone who I don't think is very high on people's radars just yet.
Absolutely. And it's also, again, worth mentioning that he was 20 when he got to the California League. You know, he's going to be pitching next year at 21, either in high A or maybe even in double A, which is a pretty, again, a really good age to be hitting those levels. That means you've got a lot of potential to keep growing.
Yeah. Jake, go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of wild cards, there is one name that is conspicuously absent from this list, and it, you know, A's fans in particular may be wondering about the biggest signing from last year, the biggest international signing from last year, Michael Lanoa, who, you know, had an elbow issue and basically disappeared. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on him or whether we should expect to see him this year.
With the international market, you have so many teams bidding for these guys. The prices can go up quickly. And I think the rule of thumb has actually been with the international guys. A lot of times it's the ones who don't get the big bonuses because so many guys are getting smaller bonuses than the big bonuses who emerge. Jose Reyes didn't get a lot of money to sign. Starling Castro is someone we've seen rise lately. And Jake and I had trouble even finding how much he signed for the digital prospect guy. I think you get
it was an embarrassingly low amount.
Yeah, you get these guys. Willy Mopeña is a great example. International players who sign for a ton of money, and you think that makes them a big prospect. But really, in the minors right now, Jesus Montero is one of the few players who signed a multi-million-dollar contract as an amateur for the international ranks, excluding the guys like Matsuzaka signed from Japan. But a lot of times, guys can stick around on the prospect scene perhaps longer than they should just because they got a huge bonus. I think after they've played a few pro seasons, it doesn't matter as much. And, well, Anoa isn't someone who's necessarily fallen off the radar already at this point. He's definitely lost a lot of steam, and that's the huge risk with taking any teenage pitcher. You don't know if he's going to be healthy enough to throw a big workload. And so far, Anoa has failed that test.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it just goes to show how much we love hype and we love, you know, the sort of lottery tickets that are some of these international prospects.
Yeah, it's exciting because there are so many players in baseball who have come from the international scene and gone on to do exceptionally well. Sometimes you get a little caught up in following the college guys and the high school guys, but there's so many diamonds in the rough on the international scene. It's a really fun part of the game to follow.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I wanted to sort of close up our discussion on the AL West now with talking a little bit about this big trade that went down and its implication for this list, of course, is Brett Wallace, the Brett Wallace and Michael Taylor swap, and sort of how you felt about that deal. How do you compare Taylor to Wallace, and who would you rather have if you were the A's?
I would rather have Taylor just because I think he's going to provide more defensive value. He's also someone who's had a lot of success in the upper minors, and Wallace did hit pretty well in the PCL. He wasn't quite as good in the International League, and I really wasn't that impressed with what he did when he was in AA. People have slapped this guy can really hit label on him pretty much ever since his end of his sophomore year in college. And yes, he can, but he didn't show a lot of patience his first year, which kind of surprised me. The walk rates weren't quite there. And yeah, he was a guy in his first full season who was started in AA and then in AAA. So you got to give him some credit for that and give him a bit of the benefit of the doubt just because he was brought along so aggressively. But even though I think he is going to develop power and he's worked very hard at his third base defense. I don't think there's a very good chance that he sticks there. Got to see him play closely a few times, and he's actually really agile, and people talk about how big he is and how that's going to limit him. He takes that as motivation, and he has really soft hands. He has a pretty good arm, so I wouldn't be shocked, actually, if he could play third base potentially adequately for a season or two. But in the long run, he's a first baseman, and you just have to be a very, very gifted hitter to be an elite first baseman. And while I see Wallace as a likely bet to be a big league regular, and perhaps his bat could be big league average or better, if he has a big league average bat and he's playing potentially below average defense, say in his late 20s at first base, he's going to end up being someone who is probably overvalued as a prospect, where Taylor is a guy who has been on the scene for a long time, ended up going to Stanford and has a body type that's pretty attractive for a ball player. But he really didn't start hitting a lot until last year. He was kind of someone who people were beginning to forget about a little bit. And he hit so much last year that it was difficult to leave him off any kind of top prospect list, and comes in with a good approach. I would rather have Taylor, just a lot of it because of the defensive value.
Absolutely. I, you know, actually got to see Taylor at Stanford, and I was really unimpressed. I was, you know, obviously as a physical specimen, he was pretty amazing, but as, you know, he didn't show a ton of power, didn't show a ton of patience. He looked like he was all athlete and no skill. And he, you know, he's a guy, I think, who has overcome the Stanford swing. Those of you who follow college baseball know what I'm talking about. Those of you who don't, Stanford has had the same manager, Mark Marquis, for 30 years, and he insists that all players who come through learn this swing that they teach, which is a very even plane. So it's good for line drive, it's good for contact, it's not so great for power. And a number of guys who come to the major leagues who were drafted out of Stanford as top prospects, Joe Borchard would be a good example, who are highly ranked, then could not sort of overcome this swing in their mechanics. John Mayberry would be another one. But Michael Taylor seems to have actually figured it out and become a much better player than he was in college, which is a very, very fun to watch.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing at the tail end of that trade, where it was kind of prospects lover's glory. We had a ton of traffic on the website for a few days there because we had done scouting reports on Wallace and Gillies, and so many people were just enamored with this trade because it almost sounded like the kind of trade that someone would make in a fantasy league. And here it is happening right after the winter meetings, and I think baseball was getting as much attention as it ever has for a December. Who follows baseball this closely in December who's not a big prospect fan? But I'm sure it's helped having MLB Network and just the amount of access there are to the Fall League and to some of the international games being televised. It's a fun time to be a baseball fan.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, you know, on that note, I actually want to shift away from talking about prospects and shift towards, again, another thing that we think we're working on, we think is going to make it even more fun to be a baseball fan, which is that first inning among the many things that we're working on. We're working on a way to open up our data to all of you out there to bring the community together and, again, keep making it fun to be a baseball fan so that people can actually access our data, do their own studies, and build it, you know, publish them on First Inning and build this community of statisticians and of people who year-round are continuing to make baseball fun to follow.
Yeah, it's neat. First Inning has a lot of really good batted-in-play data right now. I don't think there have been a ton of studies done with ground ball percentage, with line drive percentages. It's interesting, even though I'm not sure how much it really says, to see if any pitchers consistently have low line drive against percentages, or looking at hitters who have very high fly ball rates or infield fly ball rates. And it's neat seeing that kind of data at First Inning. I've also encouraged Jake to, because he has age data, have lists available of the youngest players by level. I believe it was Baseball Reference before that allowed people to do that for the minors, and they changed their site up a little bit. I think that was the right site. And now you can't do that there. So I think there are so many possibilities with the data right now, and there are a lot of sites that are publishing their data and allowing people to extract it. But I think First Inning definitely has some stuff that's unique to it, and I'm excited, Jake, to see the kind of advancements you guys can make in not only displaying your data well on your site, but sharing it with people too, and then seeing the kind of studies they come up with. I think this is kind of the grassroots of baseball and the future of baseball, and it needs to be a part of it.
Absolutely. And, I think that, it's been really amazing to see, first people, were jumping into the whole idea of replacement level and wins above replacement, and that's led to just amazing studies about Major League Baseball with, linear weights for hitting and the advanced pitching metrics. We've learned to understand base running in new ways. We're getting there on defense. We've made a lot of strides understanding defense from what used to be, errors and fielding percentage. There's now just been some amazing work by that community. And what we're really hoping to do at First Inning is to unleash that energy onto all of that intelligence and all of that creativity onto the minor leagues. And we want to really figure out, and, using the brain power of the entire community, what indicators do matter? How are we going to figure out, is line drive rate a valuable stat? How valuable are the counting numbers? How valuable are, the rate stats? We really want to figure out how do you figure out what prospects are going to break out? How do you figure out which prospects are going to be stars? We want to bring all of that together and unleash that energy to answer those questions on First Inning.
Yeah, again, it's something where I think there are plenty of opportunities for people who know how to manipulate that data, know how to work with correlations and put scouting and numbers together. Saber Scouting is a site that really made a lot of noise last year when they did a Johnny Cueto scouting report that was the top one in their Google search. Kylie McDaniel and Frankie Tillieri, the guys who started it, didn't even tell that many people. I was talking to Kylie the other day. He didn't even tell his parents he started the website, and all of a sudden they're getting hundreds of thousands of page views in a short period of time. And I think a lot of it just had to do with their name, with Saber Scouting, and they're clearly guys who are very involved with scouting. They didn't even do a lot of Saber-specific stuff on the site, except they are familiar with it. And there's definitely a demand right now from prospect people for people who understand numbers as well as scouting. The traditional baseball model, I turned to MLB Network on this evening, and they had a brand new show about inside the numbers and using numbers to understand baseball. And I was like, oh, cool, this has some potential. And then all of a sudden, Harold Reynolds starts talking about runs and RBIs. And that's what we're getting force-fed by the mainstream media, which leads us to efforts like First Inning, where we're going and actually understanding the data and making sense of it and understanding baseball at a pretty advanced level.
Yeah, and, as I said, we think we're going to get some really, really exciting things coming out of this. And, so keep your eyes open. We'll be announcing as we make progress, and all of this should be available by opening day.
And keep in mind, too, I think a lot of people see the regular season data. Another thing that First Inning has going for it is they're set up to gather data from the Arizona Fall League as well as the Winter League. So, Jake, we're planning on shortly putting together some statistical pieces from the data you provided us from the Fall League. And I think it's going to be a new angle, especially with some of the Dominican League, Venezuelan League. You end up getting much larger samples than you do in Arizona. Those leagues don't get talked about as much, but I've gone and seen, I think it was Lance Broadway who led the world in ground ball percentage so far this offseason. He was at around 75% or something. You get to see some neat numbers with those leagues.
Absolutely. And again, the Caribbean leagues are actually a little bit more interesting because the stats that a player puts up in Arizona has to be taken with a couple of grains of salt. First of all, obviously you end up with some very, very hitter-friendly environments. And second of all, you have a situation where it's sort of a development league. People are there working on stuff, or, maybe a team wants to try a guy at a new position, try and convert a guy from a starter to a reliever, that sort of thing. Whereas down in the Caribbean leagues, they're actually playing to win every night. So the numbers are going to tell you slightly different things. So it's going to be really fun to see what comes out of these studies.
And the other note I was just going to add real quick about the Fall League is people do talk about how the air is light there and the stadiums are pretty hitter-friendly. But also, even though you get some really live electric arms, Strasburg was there this year, Aaron Crow, we got to see Henry Mejia. For the most part, the pitching that you're seeing is well behind the hitting, and that's another reason why you get such lopsided offensive numbers in that league.
Absolutely. But, again, it is fun when you get to see some of those matchups, when you get to see, Strasburg facing top prospects like Dustin Ackley in the league. It's a pretty cool thing to see.
It is. So I guess we can wrap it up, again, just by saying Jake and I are going to be working hard on putting together that sample so you people can really – everyone can understand where we're coming from with the digital prospect guide, something we're really excited about, and we think you will be too. And then I think, Jake, I'm ready to start getting back to work on my AL West top 25 prospect list.
That sounds good. I'll be upstairs working on video work for the Digital Prospect Guide. So until next time, this has been a lot of fun, Adam. I look forward to doing it again.
All right. Thank everyone for listening to the Project Prospect / First Inning podcast. Take it easy.